as we are going to deal with today, is the topic of the win by Donald J. Trump as President of the United States of America. President-elect Trump is in New York City now enjoying his victory, and we're about to hear from Secretary Clinton on her defeat. But before we get to discussing that, even if we bother to discuss it at all, I'd like to just give some reflections about coming into the campaign and then during the night and then into the day. Coming in, I was really a Rand Paul person. I think Rand Paul would have been a fantastically good presidential candidate. I think he was the man for me anyway. And I wanted Rand Paul to be the winner, but he didn't. He got out early on and went back and paid attention to his constituency in Kentucky, which is all fine and good. But once he was out, I turned, along with many others, to Donald J. Trump. And at no time did I think that he was not a genuine American citizen, a successful businessman, a committed Christian, a person who loved God and country and family, and a person who was competent in every possible way. Now, having said that, let me be quick to say that I think he learned a lot about politics. I think he learned a lot about how to be a politician in the sense of speeches, presentation, and doing things that would get him elected, and now we know he is elected. So what we're saying here about Donald Trump is it's the man. Kellyanne Conway, his campaign manager this morning, talked about the candidate matters. It matters who the candidate is. Not only the issues, not only the population, not only the feelings of people at the time, but the candidate counts. And I think that was a very, very significant piece on her part to talk about Donald Trump, the candidate. And there's one thing that I have said to my family over and over again during this entire time is that it has amazed me at the ability of Donald Trump to engage large audiences, the ability of Donald Trump to keep people interested at his rallies, the ability of Donald Trump to gather the rallies in the first place without a megastar Hollywood entertainers and all that kind of stuff, which he eschewed that and didn't even want it. He was the attraction. He was the draw. He was the center of what people were looking at because he was a successful American male who wanted to help other people be successful in America. Now, I quickly say a successful American male. I don't say a successful American white male. And the reason why I don't is because I don't think Donald Trump thinks of himself as a successful American white male. Other people put that on him, as other people have put it on his audiences, saying that he appeals to white male workers, or he appeals to white male laborers, or he appeals to white labor non-college graduates, or he appeals to white male college graduates who are unemployed. And it's other people putting the white male, the white word, in front of male. I think he is a man, and I think there is a place for men in our world. Rush Limbaugh and Michael Savage and others have talked about the feminization, or as Rush likes to say, the chickification of American males. But there's a place for all Americans to look at a man who has been successful. Yes, he was given $1 million and a tremendous amount of debt by his daddy 25, 30 years ago, but he took that $1 million and that debt. He saw possibilities, he saw potentials, he saw visions, and he took that and turned that into a huge international media real estate empire. And probably has, I think the quote is something like $4.5 billion for himself, which is very small, by the way. I think Bill Gates, the founder of Microsoft and the patenter of the Microsoft computer language, I think Bill Gates is valued at something like $86 billion. I think Mark Zuckerberg, who thought of Facebook, a very simple concept, but he utilized it properly, I think he's valued at over $100 billion or something like that, $126 billion, and so on. So in terms of personal wealth, Donald J. Trump is small potatoes, but a billionaire nonetheless. That's not to be discounted. As we look at the phenomenon of a Trump presidency, I think a lot of people on today's programs have been saying things like, it's amazing, it's a miracle, it's a stunning, it's shocking, how did we get it wrong? Well, I think the word I would want to use in every one of those cases is underestimation. Now, underestimation, as applied to the situation in America, I think the pundits, the media people, the pollsters, the people who sit behind the desks at the big radio stations and television stations around the nation, the editors of newspapers, they're out of touch. Out of touch with reality. They live in a cocoon. They live in a bubble. They live in a world of influence and power, and they live in an elite world that doesn't have much to do with people other than giving a tip to the janitor, perhaps, or giving a tip to the taxi cab driver. But they have nothing to do with the people in the suburbs. They have nothing to do with the people in the cities. They have nothing to do with the people in the inner cities other than look at them and buy into a whole system of stereotypical types, which have been proven to be wrong and most certainly not accepted by the American people themselves. So not being informed, not having the proper estimation, the underestimation of the American people, and the underestimation of Donald Trump. Now, just a few minutes ago, I heard Karl Rove. Now, I'm not a big Karl Rove person. I think that Karl Rove has his own little agendas that he plays all the time, and he's definitely a Bushy. And, you know, the Bushies weren't very good this time around. George Bush, all the Bushes didn't support Donald Trump. They were not supporting of the 14 million Republican primary voters who put Donald Trump up as the candidate. Reince Priebus this morning on Fox talked about those 14.5 million Republican primary voters, the highest ever, who elected Donald Trump to be the standard bearer for the Republican Party in this election. And he said, I am not going to act against the will of 14.5 million Republican primary voters. My job as the head of the RNC, the Republican National Committee, is to help and fulfill the desires of those 14.5 million primary voters, the highest of all time, which went to Donald J. Trump. So Reince understood that, but George W. Bush didn't understand that. He didn't like it, and so he acted and openly acted against the candidate and spoke against the candidate. George Herbert Walker Bush's family acted against and spoke against the candidate. They said they were going to vote for Hillary Clinton. Some have reported that actually George W. Bush did vote for Clinton. Condoleezza Rice in the Bush administration was anti-Trump. Dana Perino, in my opinion, on Fox News, the former Bush press secretary, was anti-Trump. Colin Powell, General Colin Powell, also a Bush appointee in the military, chief of staff of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, he was against Trump and said he was going to vote for Hillary because he couldn't have Trump. Kasich, the governor of Ohio, against the will of his own people in the state of, and against his promise. Kasich made a promise, and he broke the promise. He said, well, I do it for conscience sake. Well, if you had a conscience, you wouldn't have taken the pledge in the first place. Well, I had to because I was forced to. Well, what kind of man takes a pledge because he was forced to and then reneges on the pledge later on? So Kasich, so many people Jeb Bush, did not support Donald Trump. And these people were uninformed as to what. They didn't have the right estimation. They underestimated the feeling of the American people. Now, as I said, it's an underestimation, and that's just being gentle with it because I think it's also an ignorance. I think there was an ignorance, and it was identified early on by Donald Trump, of the elite political people, the politicians, the news people, the media people, an elite underestimation, to be sure, but a non-appreciation. I remember how many times in the beginning of all this that the backers of Donald Trump were told that they were angry, and that they were angry young men, angry old men, angry white men, angry fat women, you know, on and on. Ridiculous. And that was insulting to the electorate and insulting to the American voter, but also indicative of the fact that these people did not understand, nor did they care to understand, what ordinary, regular Americans were feeling. whatever they were feeling, it was judged to be wrong. Just this morning, watching a Fox in the morning show, one of the Deucey guy, talking about, you know, when people would answer questionnaires, they were always afraid that the person with the clipboard was marking down racist, a bigot, a white racist, white bigot, stereotypical comment, angry American, angry white worker, uneducated, elementary degree, never graduated from high school, idiot. As Hillary Clinton would say herself, deplorable, irredeemable, a despicable, a dark personalities. People are not that, but they've been labeled like that by the powerful, by the elites, by the media, by the television people, by the press, by the pundits, by the Karl Roves of the world, and they've been hurt by it. You know, when you say these things about people as a group, as a class, a white men, white women, black men, black women, you're categorizing them stereotypically. The actual categorization, the objectification of a person or a group of people is itself an aspect of prejudice. When you categorize or objectivize, that's what Hitler did. And the liberals have been doing that. You know, white, male, uneducated, or uncollege graduate workers are bigots, or they cling to their Bibles and their guns, as Barack Obama would say. You see, from the very earliest time of the Barack Obama administration, when we had the incident in Cambridge where the policemen acted stupidly, and then we had that stupid beer summit thing, and then you had the whole aspect of people cling to their guns and their Bibles when he talked about the people of Pennsylvania, and then people, when he said to the grouping of Christian evangelicals that he's disappointed in American Christians, that they should be more on target with him, and he is disappointed in the agenda that American Christian evangelicals had because it didn't match his agenda. And then we have the whole aspects of Muslim leaders going to the White House and Muslim Brotherhood going to the White House and almost no Christian leaders being invited to the White House and Christmas being played down and Easter being played down and the idea that we should have more Muslim events and more Muslim cultural events and more Muslim things, all the while claiming to be a Christian or a Catholic. These things spoke to the American population. They understood that. They saw it. They believed it. They did not discount it or ignore it. Now, that might not have meant anything, those things, Catholicism, Christianity, and all the rest that I've just mentioned, that might not have meant anything to the New York Times or even the New York Post or even the Washington newspapers or anything. It might have meant nothing to them. But the point is that it meant something to the American people. And just because the political, media, intellectual, intelligentsia, academic, elite did not agree with that, and even to be bolder, did not care about that, and judged that if you had those opinions, you were a bigot or a racist or Ku Klux Klaner or some kind of person to be discounted as despicable, deplorable, irredeemable. Those are the statements that people made, and they still resonate in my ears. And I have a doctorate degree. And I'm a supporter of Donald Trump. And I resent someone telling me that I'm ignorant, that I'm a racist, that I'm a bigot, that I'm deplorable, and I'm a dark person, and that I am irredeemable. Please, get over that. You have the problem. I don't. So that, is that anger? No. Yes. No. Yeah, okay. Let's say it is anger. But it's not irrational anger or anger with your fist up in the air and your thumb in your mouth. You know what I mean? It's anger because you have not paid attention to me, what I have to say, and you've ignored me and shoved me aside and ghettoized me and called me names and painted me into a corner, all the while claiming that all you want me to do is give you money and vote for you. Well, I'm not going to do it. And they didn't do it. They came out for Donald J. Trump. I've talked about one of the big things being an underestimation or a non-appreciation for what was really happening in America. And among those things is the aspect of anger and fear. I've mentioned that already, but fear is the piece I want to deal with at this point. People are not afraid. They're afraid of what's real. In other words, people aren't walking around because they're paranoid or because they're xenophobic, that means afraid of other people, or Islamophobic or homophobic or whatever the various and sundry labels that people want to place on American citizens. They are afraid because they see the violence. They see the violence in Ferguson. What was the violence? Looting, lawlessness, destruction, burning, rioting, breaking the law. And what was the result? The police stood around and controlled the crowds. The police stood around and let the crowds burn down the businesses. The police stood around and allowed people to loot all over the place. Now, what is that? That produces fear and anxiety in the American population. The American people were afraid when they saw the Major Hassan kill 13 American soldiers in that shooting spree, but because he was a Muslim, you know, and because he was Islamic, and, oh, we have to understand, you know, it was workplace violence, Eric Holder said, workplace violence. You see, the Cambridge police, who was just trying to defend the man's property, they acted stupidly. I mean, these are the things that resonated with the American people from the very beginning of the Barack Obama administration, of which Hillary Clinton was very much associated with that. And the people associated her with that whole regime and that whole concept. And when she had her sick and tired statement the other day, I'm sick and tired of those despicable, deplorable, irredeemable, whatever else she called us, Trump supporters. She wasn't attacking Donald Trump. She was attacking Donald Trump's supporters. That resonated with the American people. Of course, people in the media and the press and the pollsters, oh, well, we discount that, we discount that. We have these objective questions we're going to ask you. We have the objective concepts we have want to bring to you. We have these objective ideas that we want to put in our exit poll things. And the people did not respond to that because they knew that when they responded to that, they would be labeled by the pollster as being something less than desirable. Now, I just heard Karl Rove again on the TV saying, well, I don't want to take anything away from him, but it wasn't so much that Trump won, it was that Hillary lost. Well, that's so trite and infantile, Karl Rove. Shame on you. Trump worked hard. He went out there. He did 4 and 5 rallies. Those of you who know what I'm talking about, he did 4 and 5 rallies a day. He spoke for half an hour, 45 minutes at each rally. He was animated. He was energized. He was on target. He was focused. He was engaged with the people. He was with it. And that was work. It's not at all easy for somebody to do that. And so Carl says, well, I don't want to take it away from him, but, you know, well, it wasn't so much that he won, but, you know, it was that she lost. Hogwash. Hogwash. Yes. She didn't do what she was supposed to do. She didn't deliver the goods. She didn't get elected. But the point was, is that you cannot, and just by flippantly saying, Karl Rove saying, well, I don't want to take it away from him. Well, don't. Then don't. Credit the man with what the credit is due. He is the president-elect of the United States. He achieved that through hard work, through study, through reflection, through decision-making, through choosing the right team, by getting out there and being with the American people, by not underestimating, by understanding, by having an appreciation for what the American people were feeling and doing, and by communicating clearly, over and over again. Myself, every time my phone gave an indication that Trump was having a rally, I turned it on and listened to the rally every single time, because his message to me spoke to me. Because his message meant that he heard my concerns, that he was concerned about my country, that he wanted to do something good for me, that he was going to be my champion, my spokesman, my president, that it was about us, not about him. And as he used to say in the very beginning, are you with me? Are you with me? That was Hillary. Are you with me? But Trump says, no, I'm asking you to be with me. Trump said, I am with you. I am your champion. I am listening to you. I want to do what you need to be done. I hear you. I will make America great again. And there were thunderous applause and cheers every time he did that. And why? Because that was the message people needed to hear, wanted to hear, and they knew because of the person, because the candidate matters, as Kellyanne Conway said, the candidate matters because they knew that he meant it and sincerely intended to do his best to accomplish that. That's why Donald Trump got elected, not because Hillary Clinton failed to get elected, but because Donald Trump overcame the odds of the mainstream media, overcame the odds of what Rush Limbaugh likes to call as a drive-by media, overcame the odds of antipathy within his own party, overcame Hillary Clinton's campaign, overcame the odds against him by not receiving any kudos from anybody. He overcame. He's a winner, and he will win for America, as he promised to do in his speech. And even the acceptance speech was so Trump. Ryan Priebus said he wrote that speech. He wrote that acceptance speech. The people on the Fox News thing said, oh, well, who wrote it? Who told him what to say? Who told him what to think about? Who told him what the phrasing was? And Ryan said, no, Donald Trump writes his own speeches. Yes, other people put it together, but he goes through each and every speech. He makes comments. He makes cross-outs. He makes additions. He does the editing, and that's the way speech writing is done, by the way. He is a hands-on, and what he delivers are his own words in his own way, with the advice of political consultants, of course. But that's the acceptance speech was Donald Trump. And what did he say? America has to move forward. America has to unite. America has to get together. America has to be one nation, you know, under God, saluting one American flag, one of the themes of his own campaign. And together we're stronger, together we're greater, and together we can accomplish great things. We can dream great things, he said. We can think great things. We can move forward greatly as a united country, people working together for the common good and the greater good. So to wrap this up for today, and I'm going to make a few comments. I'm going to try to do this every day. It's a little bit of an effort on my part, but I enjoy doing it, and I hope you enjoy listening to it. The first thing is the surprise and stunned of all the media, including Fox News. Well, that's because they did not understand, and maybe they did not care to understand. They did not appreciate, and maybe they did not want to appreciate, the feelings of the American population, the American electorate. They underestimated the depth of commitment of the American people to change. And if there's any surprise, it's to all of those pundits, pollsters, and others. I have to give Larry Sabato, who was on Fox this morning, a lot of kudos, because unlike those pollsters, Karl Rove being one of them, who gets on and gives sort of a kind of like, oh, gee, oh, shucks, Sabato said, I got it wrong. My people got it wrong. My advice was wrong. My paradigm was wrong. My polling was wrong. My model was wrong. And I'm sorry. I apologize. I put myself forward as a person who knew, and he says, I didn't know. And insofar as I made the statement that I did know and the data was fast and hard and good and right, and I insisted on that, I was wrong, and I apologize to you for giving you wrong information. And then later on he says, we have to correct that. We have to correct the polling. We have to correct the model. We have to correct the paradigm, because garbage in means garbage out. And I give Larry Sabato tremendous kudos. Thank you, Larry, because that is what we need to hear. And if there's nothing else that comes out of the polling aspect of this, it's a renewed appreciation for reflection and a renewed appreciation for to appreciate and not to underestimate and not to take anything for granted, but to be alive. See, Donald Trump is a businessman. That's one of the beautiful things about his candidacy, and one of the beautiful things is going to be about his presidency. He's a man who knows that life and death counts upon or depends upon accurate understanding, accurate appreciation, accurate estimation, accurate encompassment, accurate evaluations, so that based upon all that accuracy, you can formulate potentials, possibilities, and then you can go forward with those, always coming back to evaluate as you go along, as the project is going along, as the building is being built, as the project is being carried out, to do and to act according to good information, positive information, accurate information, appreciated information, a good estimation of what's going on, and then evaluate, 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 and test and evaluate. We lost that during the Obama administration, maybe even during the Bush administration. We lost the objectivity of reflection and evaluation. We took and bought hook, line, and sinker, a philosophical, a theological, an ontological, a sociological, an economic viewpoint that was, we believe, the truth. Well, if we've learned anything, the truth, other than God and religion, doesn't exist. And we have to always keep that in mind, to be on our game, to be keen, and not to take anything for granted. Okay, this is Fred, Pastor Fred, and I want to thank you for listening to this. I appreciate your time and effort, and I hope to be able to have a dialogical program in the future, more of a call in what you have to say and what you think and how you think. One of the topics we're going to deal with in the next program is the topic of a Trump administration's approach to immigration as I see it. And I think what it will be informed on is the information of Trump as a New Yorker and a cosmopolitan and an urban personality. And I think that many people who don't grasp that, his cosmopolitan, his urban nature, his sociological context in Queens and New York City, miss the point of what he will do under the umbrella of his philosophical concept of law and order, and then his practical concept. Because if there's one thing I can tell you about New Yorkers, they are practical, and they do the practical. They're not bound to the ideological. And that's one of the reasons also that Trump won, is he wasn't bound by the ideology of the Republican Party, the ideology of the Democrat Party, or the ideology of the society. He came at it with a new and fresh perspective based upon his own intellectual, intelligent evaluation of an estimation and appreciation of what was going on and what was going to go on. Thank you very much for listening. And please like this program if you liked it. Thank you very much.